This is Rating Descending,
where we watch IMDb's Worst 250 so you don't have to.
My name is Abigail Ward.
And I'm Michelle St. Clair.
And this week we watched VHS Viral. A Los Angeles police chase sends a fame-obsessed man on a wild ride to save his girlfriend from a cybernetic terror. Let's watch. I'm dripping in oil, by the way. My hands are just covered in oil.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Greasy hands.
But that's mostly because your pre-record ritual is to get, like, to say a tub of oil would imply something therapeutic.
But I think it is more like a bubbling vat.
Yeah. It is to harken back to our Jason Takes Manhattan episode, a loose barrel, but of oil.
Like, you're just smiling because you got to say harken back, you know, like I just brought you.
I was smiling thinking of loose barrels.
I just want to say, I don't like that you're trying to imply that I'm the only person that does that here. Like, it's a ritual we do together.
I didn't imply it on purpose, but you're right. I should have been more upfront.
Yeah. What we do is that we hold hands and we go, you ready? And then we step in and immerse ourselves.
Yeah. I always, like, for me, the scariest part is when you first plunge, because I'm not sure if you guys at home are aware.
The first plunge is scary.
It's scary. And the reason it's scary is that if you plunge, the pleasure is so good that a lot of people don't remember to come back out and breathe.
Yeah.
So you just get lost in the oil.
You get into a really hot bath and it's the temperature that you want, but when you put that first foot into the bath, it really hurts because your foot is so, I don't know what the science is around it and there's no way of knowing, but it's like it's like your foot is really tender and like really sensitive to the heat, but you know that the rest of your body will be fine. It's just your feet that are a problem. So you get in really slowly and it hurts, but you know it won't hurt soon and it's pleasurable, but in a painful way. That's what the first plunge is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm covered in oil still. What were you gonna say?
Sometimes it's easy to get like bummed out about the podcast, and that's because, you know, we're making like a public thing and sometimes people say mean things and I'm someone who's sensitive and I get stuck in my own head and I'm like, maybe the thing we're making is not very nice. And then I think about some of the nice things that people have said, and that's good. And then literally while I was thinking about that, I saw we got an email.
We got an email.
And it is to be read out. So let me read it out to you. Last week, while listening to your review of The Last Thing He Wanted, I recall Abigail mentioning how she hated the use of Have Gun, Will Travel, as that song featured in Stand By Me and was fucking epic. I agree that song is very special in my mind as linked to Stand By Me. When watching an episode of Riverdale, a show I only watch as a form of putting myself through pain, I saw how one episode ended with two male leads of the show on the run as Have Gun, Will Travel played in the background. You wouldn't believe where they were walking as it played. It was the train tracks. Naturally, I fumed. Emphasis requested. I fumed as a show of such atrociously obnoxious quality would even dare to try and reference such a masterpiece. I was very angry. The tale I tell is one so that Abigail knows that I agree with her. Fuck 'em. That shit belongs to Stand By Me. I've recently started to read the book it's based off, and it's heavily implied that Gordy LaChance is a failed abortion. This fact isn't relevant to the email. It was just in my mind. Sincerely, friend of the podcast, Luke Anton.
Thank you, Luke. Luke gets it. Oh, my God. It actually gets it. Yeah, like, I'm so glad I can share this rage with someone. It's such a special film to me because I wanted to be Gordy LaChance, a failed abortion as well. But I just love that someone shares this particular niche hatred of a very silly, inane thing. Like, it bothers me. I'm like, you can't take that from Stand By Me. That's Stand By Me's, okay? You're done. It's over.
I didn't know the name of the song was actually Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel, it's the path of man. It's from a TV show.
Paladin,
where will you go? Paladin, far from home.
Yeah. What the audience... So I was thinking, like, I think we do make a good product in the end. I think we make a good podcast. And then,
hey, every review that I've read of ours is them saying, love the burps, Abby, keep them up.
Yeah, it's true. a lot of our reviews and emails reference the burps, including a very sweet one we got in February. Mentioned the burps as one of the best bits.
Yeah. No, I thank you for that email, Luke. And by the way, I know you're a sensitive little baby, and that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. But I was thinking today, I was like, I noticed our TikToks are quite like getting a lot of interaction, yeah. Which is really interesting because for the first time, like, I know that they're doing well because they're hitting people that are not
our
people,
audience.
Yeah, that are not our audience. Yeah. And they're a lot of straight dudes being like, how is that misogynistic? Like, it's so unforgiving. Yeah. And like, they're not even disputing what we're saying. They're literally just being like, it seems pretty unforgiving. But I get really excited by it because I'm like, holy shit. Like, yeah, it's actually fun true. To reach yeah. audiences that aren't intended for us because who gives a fuck? Like, this doesn't matter. Like, of course there's going to be people that don't like our podcast. That's fine. I'm just excited that we're getting to the point of minor success that people we don't want to advertise to are still finding out about us.
I mean,
that's great.
Our audience has literally tripled in the last few months. So that makes sense.
Baby, yeah. I think we should get some rating descending merch made and send them to our best listeners. Luke, you're number one, baby.
Oh, absolutely. Just for
that. Tess, number two.
Look, shipping is going to be atrocious, but good friend of the podcast, Julian Legere, absolutely. Because literally, hey, Julian, I was looking at the, I will always recommend fans go check it out, the rating descending all-stars list of recurring actors and technicians. And I noticed he changed Martin Lawrence to a screenshot of G-rated thing because of the we had a Twitter dispute.
I love it. We make such a niche, silly product. Yeah. And the people that enjoy it really enjoy it. And we enjoy you in return, not in a sexual way. It just sounded kind of creepy. Michelle, I have a question for you because it is Spookums in April.
I need you to know so that you're not surprised, is that instead of taking your audio from last time with the music, I'm just going to put the music under that.
I have a question for you.
I love questions.
Machete Saint Scare.
It's not, no, that's Halloween, Michelle. It's not this Halloween.
But it's, okay.
It's spooky.
Well, we need a new spooky name for
sure. You're right, you're right.
My question is, what's the spookiest thing that's ever happened to you?
Oh, my God.
Because I'll give you a moment to think because I'll tell you mine, okay? It'll just give you some processing time.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to catch you off guard. When this checks out. I did a ghost tour.
Yeah, and it does check out.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I think about this a lot. I went on a ghost tour. We went to the quarantine station, which is in Manly, Sydney. It's on North Head, and there is barely anything built on North Head. It's still very, like, it's very, like, scraggly. It's like a proper, like, piece of cliff by the sea. Mm. And the old quarantine station still takes up a lot of the land there. And you have this beautiful view of Sydney ahead of you, and there's just wide open ocean behind you. The quarantine station was full, like, a lot of people just went there to basically just go die of diseases once they had, like, boarded off of immigrant ships. So the tour was cool. We had to walk on floorboards because there were, like, people that were buried with cholera. So, like, they just wanted to be safe. Yeah. And towards the end of the tour, we're at the bottom of this big hill and someone went, "What's that?" And we all stared up the hill and we looked up at this house with a big veranda at the top of the hill. And there was a man glowing in white. And he was, like, looking into the trees, and he turned his head and looked at all of us, and we all just started screaming and bolting in the other direction. And I remember I got back to the front of the tour, and I was burying my head into my mum's, like, stomach. I was, like, probably 10. And I was like, "It was so scary." And my uncle was like, there, Abby, it's probably a bloke from the pub that they've given 20 bucks to.
No. He turned around, and he was like, "I bring you love." And it was Mr. Burns the whole time.
Anyway, I got into the car, and I was so thoroughly spooked that my mum had to drive me to KFC and get me a little Zinger Bucks. And that fixed everything.
Had to.
I have to say, sitting in the fluorescent light of KFC really just takes away any spooky feelings
I was
that you have.
So scared that I had to have fried chicken and shit myself.
And then vom in the backseat. KFC used to make me vom a lot as a kid. What's your spooky moment?
Gosh. I mean, look, I don't think I've had that many, like, paranormal or supernatural experiences, right?
I think. Oh, by the way, I don't think that was paranormal. I think they definitely paid a dude, but it spooked me.
For sure. Part of that, I think, is a lot of the time people have these supernatural experiences, like, their communal experiences with like people that you know and love you in return. And I just didn't have that for a really long time. So, you know, you need like friends to experience it with. And I also think, you know, a lot of them happen like outside of your home.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't live in a haunted area and I didn't really leave my home. So I haven't had that many paranormal things happen. But certainly I've had a lot of things that are scary happen. Like when I had my first day teaching and on the way, I shit my pants. It was pretty spooky.
That was definitely spooky.
I was pretty scared.
A spirit overtook you.
It really felt like that in the moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing actually spooky has happened to you. Not even a small thing. Like, you didn't get, like, a chill up your back one day.
I mean, if the question is, have I ever had a chill in my back, then the answer is yes. I have sometimes had a chill in my back.
You've never been spooked.
I've never had a chill in my back and gone, a ghost!
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been like, ooh, got the shivers.
Hmm.
I don't think I've had a haunting. I don't think I've had a haunting. Let alone of Bly Manor, Netflix, right?
Nice.
Let alone of Hill House. That's the other one, right?
That's very disappointing, Michelle.
Hey, you didn't tell me and then I was meant to come prepared.
I gave you a good 5-minute story moment for you to think up something.
And the
good.
Whole time I was like, come on, surely. I've done things like camp in the woods at night. Surely one of those was spooky.
I feel like I get spooked all the time.
Oh, I get startled a lot. I get like...
But not startled. I go like ooh,
that's spooky.
Okay.
Like at nighttime, I'm like, that's spooky. You know, when it's like dark, I'm like, ooh, that's spooky.
Remember how you told me that when you were like 18, your mum brought over this dude called Fantastic and he like appeared in the doorway and freaked the shit out of you.
So what, actually, that was really funny because I'm pretty sure we were watching Scream. This was when I was a little older, so I had friends. We were watching Scream, but I was still living at my mum's. I had like a lounge room that had like a sliding door to the side. So it was all accessible from the front. And we were all just like watching this, you know, a little funny but genuinely quite scary movie, and we're like halfway through it was starting to get scarier, and then we hear this like tapping on the sliding door, but we had the blinds down so we couldn't see what it was. And I was like, oh my god, what is it? And I like walk over and everyone's like, what is that? And I like peer behind the sliding door and it's like pure darkness, and then all I see is teeth, and then next to the teeth my mum's face comes charging towards the sliding door. And then as I opened it, I realized the teeth was this man called Fantastic, who, because it was like 1 a.m. there's no street lights and he had very dark skin, I just couldn't see him. Nor could I see my mum until she got closer. So it was and then my mum had brought home someone who was like 15 years younger. It was just this guy named Fantastic.
Was she getting lucky?
I have no idea.
Hope she was.
Certainly. I think it's more likely that she was very drunk and he was a nice man who was taking her home.
Oh, God bless your mom. See, that's spooky. That's a fun spooky.
It's pretty spooky. That's pretty spooky. But it turns out it was parents.
Speaking of spookies.
You got this. No, you got this. Come on, we have so much energy. We're like
speaking of spookies.
Oh, wow. I love that. Oh my god!
This week we watched VHS Viral.
The whole thing that I said last week when I pitched to you Spookums in April was, man, last time we had these 2010s horrors, they were like dull in a way that's like hard to pump up into a podcast. So let's add a little flavor to them. And then I watched this and I'm like, we're fine. This is insane.
So much flavor. I watched this last night in bed and I had a really tough day yesterday. Like I got into bed and I was feeling really low and I just had a big cry and I don't know why, but I really needed it. But I had such a big cry, like my eyes were puffy and I was just like, friend. Oh, I feel so like low and hopeless. And I was like, gotta watch this movie. And it made me feel so much better. Like, I'm just calling it, VHS Viral cured my depression, all right?
I mean, that is why we do the podcast, both of us just love bad movies.
Yeah,
like that.
Because I put it on not expecting much because, I thought it would be some drab, like, again, late 2000s, like there's a family in a house and they're getting haunted, some like ghost dimension shit.
Yeah.
And I put it on and it was just balls to the walls from the beginning. And it was so hammy and over the top.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I couldn't tear my eyes away. Like, I was so tired and sad. But I was lying there on my side in bed, just grinning at my computer screen like an idiot for, like, half an hour. I was like, Claude, come see this. I thoroughly enjoyed myself with this one.
My only qualm, right, to say up front, was that...
Your only qualm?
My only major, like, qualm with the viewing experience...
Okay.
...was that we actually had both tried to watch this days ago.
Yeah.
During, like, what now might either be a bonus episode or a lost episode. Time will tell what we can salvage.
Yeah.
But we were meant to watch it, and then we kept having these technical issues. And for me, it was manifesting in the copy that I had kept, like... having weird playback problems.
Mm.
But Abby, you've seen it. You know, it
just looks like that.
It does a lot of, like, intentionally
jumping
janky,
and
glitchy,
cutting, yeah.
You know, like you've run a tape over a magnet and like stomped on it and stuff. So I'm like, is this intentional or is it unintentional? I'm like cross-referencing it with another copy, like on my laptop at the same time. So I can be like, okay, so that's okay. That's not intentional. Okay.
Right.
Fix that. Okay. Is that one? No, it's not. Okay.
And then we also had the segment that had no subtitles.
Yeah.
There's a bit in the film, listeners, that is, it's a Spanish.
Yeah. Like set in Spain.
Set in Spain, Spanish. Actually, I think it's set in Mexico.
There's a lot of this film that has either...
They go to like Tijuana.
Either Mexican influence or is in Mexico. But that one, when I looked it up, because I had to double check, I'm like, why is there no subtitles? Is that intentional? Is that a mistake? What's happening? It said it was in Madrid.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a Spanish segment where like... we'll talk about it later. But
we'll come back to it.
It was like a 20-minute bit, and it had no subtitles.
Yeah.
So you just had to... Luckily, I have to say to its credit... I could kind of figure out everything that was happening without needing to know what they were saying. So that's something.
And look, I'm telling you right now, like, this is the, you know, where you see the end of the story and then it's going to be 2 weeks earlier until we get to it. That's actually the reason there's no subtitles. Not our fault. Entirely the movie.
Oh, okay.
I'll come back to it.
Amazing. This film is a bit of a headache because it is... It's a compilation. It's an anthology film.
Yeah.
Where, like, there's little movies within one framework. Like, there's a long story that ties it.
The framing story.
And then there's three separate stories within that. Out of the three, Michelle, and we'll go through them, because I thought, why not replicate what you did in movie 43? And there's not as many to do.
I'm
so
envious.
But we can at least just go through the three of them.
As someone who was entirely, my spirit was broken by doing the notes for movie 43.
And we were delirious doing the episode. I was like, fucking hell, it's been like an hour and a half. We gotta wrap this up.
Yeah, like that episode is actually not our longest episode, but it's our longest recording. And we were like sweating.
Spiritually, it was our longest episode.
Yeah, I'm so envious at how few there are to do.
Yeah, I expected far worse, but yeah, not too much research.
You're gonna ask me what my favorite is?
What's your favorite?
What's the criteria? When you say favorite, am I being genuine? What do I think is the best one?
No criteria. What's your favorite?
My favorite has got to be the spooky cloak. You know, Dante the Great.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's going to be a long time in the podcast before something peaks. Spooky cloak. What if magician cloak was scary?
My favorite was, and it was literally just for the performances rather than the plot. I liked Bonehead, like the skater one.
Oh.
Just because I thought the two main guys were actually really fun to watch.
What if skateboarders meet skeletons?
Yeah. And they were really like kind of casual about it, being like, oh, dude, that's gross. Like, I should have popped him. Like,
That one showed the real hell, which is having to hang out with those skateboarders for like 20 minutes. That really felt like the scariest thing we've seen so far. I was like, get me out of here.
They're like teenagers with a gun. That fucks me up. Anyway, I think we should just go through each of them just to explain what happens.
So you go into the overview bit.
But the overview is what we're going to be talking about. Just want to give some general information before we do that.
Yeah.
This film was made in 2014. It is like the third in the VHS series.
Yeah.
It's got 4.2 stars on IMDb, by the way. We're still in the 4.2 and we're going to be here for a while.
So high.
So like there, There isn't like a one director because there's multiple directors for each section. But the whole franchise was created by Brad Miska in 2012. And I have to say, like, the Stupid Podcast makes us privy to franchises that it's almost like you know they exist in the back of your mind, but you would never bother with them. Like, you would never bother to even think about them. And then all of a sudden you have to do, like, an hour's research into them for no fucking good reason. But yeah, so I've known about the VHS. Like, I knew they existed, but I never would have bothered to have a look. Did you know they existed?
No, I had no idea they existed until I had to try and find a copy. And let me tell you, because it doesn't stream anywhere in Australia, monstrously difficult.
Yeah.
And I actually at one point got the wrong VHS movie because I think I either got VHS or VHS 2 or something instead of this one.
Oh wow, so the first fucking VHS that came out in 2012, again, they all follow the same thing of being an anthology of like various
anthologies.
Yeah, they're all the same kind of premise. But the first one had Adam Wingard as one of the directors, and I fucking hate that guy. I actually hate him so much.
Wait, no, didn't he do Death Note? Isn't this his second directorial appearance on this list?
Oh no, wait, he's not in Viral.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me, the guys in this one, they're not, like, I don't think you'll recognize them.
They're not notable. No, I can tell.
Yeah. So the first film, the first part of this film, like, it opens up, and I have to say the opening for me was almost one of the best bits.
I totally agree.
Because it's like this girl on a bridge with the wind in her hair, and she's like looking at the camera, and she's like, stop, why are you always filming me?
I think she says, why is it called a river? And then he goes, because that's what it is. And she's like,
oh my God, stop.
She has like a streak in her hair. It's classic, I'll never die.
Yeah. And it's like, Claude, when we were like dating last year, when we're getting together, he was like, yeah, I remember he said to me, he was like, I love you so much. I feel like you're that bit in all those shitty films where the wife is dead and the guy has old footage of her being like in the wind and her hair is flowing and she's in bed and the covers are on and she's like, stop filming me. And he's like, I feel like you're that at the moment, like you're going to die. And I was like, what the fuck? But then I watched this movie and I was like, it's that trope. Yeah. It's like the dead wife trope.
We all know the trope, and watching that made me realize I don't think I've ever seen a film actually do it, unironically.
Same. And like there's the whole like first section is her and him, like this, the guy that's recording, like in a relationship, and she's like, why do you always like film all the time? And he wants to be like a famous filmmaker. And then they get through their relationship and you can see she's getting a bit more annoyed with him, and she's kind of like, why are you always filming? And like they have a, like he gets like beaten up by his grandma, which they never explain. That's just a thing in there.
So strange.
And then you see his grandma naked at a certain point as well.
Because it's scary.
And it's like, because really we want to see the young woman naked, but you gotta see the grandma. But it, like the whole film kind of opens when like he's recording the TV and there's a car chase and he's like, oh my God, I've got to go film this. I don't know why. And she's like, stop. And he convinces her to let him go. And that's where the whole framework fucking part of this film comes. They call it Vicious Cycles. That's what this part of the film is called, Vicious Cycles. And it's like in interlude one, interlude two.
Yeah,
not that this film deserves anything labeled interlude.
No, it doesn't.
Far too elegant for this kind of movie.
I do think like spooky ice cream truck car chase might actually be one of the worst plot premises.
Yes,
we've seen.
So confusing, because when he goes out into the street, everyone's acting weirdly, and there's an ice cream truck that's on the run, and he wants to catch up to it, but he misses it, and his girlfriend Iris, she goes out into the street like in a trance, and the ice cream truck apparently picks her up and takes her, though we don't see it.
I guess we don't see it, and then it also hits a policeman who is just standing in the middle of the road. His arm goes flying.
It like lands at his feet and it's like this clean, crisp arm.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, whoa.
Special effects are terrible.
They're so bad and everyone reacts like nothing happened.
Again, I know this was one of the worst bits of the film, but it made me the happiest.
There's a later bit where someone five people watch someone fall off of a bridge and they go, Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Because this whole storyline is interspliced between the other ones.
Yeah.
But let's just get this one out of the way.
Okay, yeah.
The next time we see him, he's on a bike and she, Iris, is screaming at him in a phone being like, oh my God, like help me. And she's screaming. And we're meant to now infer that she's in the truck and she's been taken and he's trying to chase her. And I couldn't figure that out.
I never inferred that once. Never, ever. Never, I mean, did that happen.
I only know that because I was frantically looking up the plot.
You know how it's become a recurring bit of I'm usually good at passing the intended plot elements. Yeah. Never was that my inference. I thought he was just chasing after the truck because everyone was and it was spooky.
Right. So, again, I only know this because I went, where the fuck is she? And I looked it up, but you're right.
Why would she be in this speeding truck standing fully upright?
They don't show us that she's been taken. No. There's so many confusing shots.
I thought
it
was just that she vanished. I didn't think it was that she was taken. I thought it was like magic.
Yeah, I don't know.
And the truck was making people violent and then I heard. You know what? There's no point. Yeah, continue.
And then after some failed attempts at catching up to her throughout the movie, he manages to get to her at the end.
Yeah.
And he gets inside the truck, which is now empty and sitting in that river that they're talking about, where she's like, there isn't much in this river. It's sitting at the basin of this river.
Yeah.
And he opens the truck and she's on a screen and she starts like hitting her head against a wall, telling him to update some file. And when he does upload some file. And then he does it.
Yeah.
And he gets out of the truck and he realizes that her body is slumped against the truck.
Because it is magic, right?
Yeah.
It's a magic truck.
And he takes a phone out of her mouth and he sees himself. And then it just kind of tracks out.
There were like the hands that were...
disembodied hands.
That were taped to the wheel. Ostensibly as if that's how the truck was going. Which I think is very funny because if the hands are attached to the wheel, they can't steer. That's also... hands aren't required on the wheel to make the truck go. It would be like a foot on the pedal.
Is it just useless to try and describe this film to people?
It's completely inscrutable.
I'm saying this out loud and I'm like, why would anyone try and decipher this with
us? But at the same time, you just know that they went, fuck yes, slam dunk. When they like finished the ending, they were like, we fucking nailed it.
Beautiful. So that's the whole framework, right?
Yeah. The only interlude that I wanted to particularly bring up was there was like a party that was, I'm pretty sure, meant to be like a Mexican family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which I only bring up because the music in the background, listeners, please tell me if you've ever heard of the PSP game Chili Con Carnage, which was like Max Payne, but a comedy and Mexican. It was so good. I had so much fun playing it. I have no concept as an Australian of whether it was like lovingly made by Mexicans or whether it was probably not good on reflection because it's caricaturizing. Like, there's not many American Mexicans in Australia, so it's harder for us to glean that. But at the time, it was fucking great, and I was like 10. So much fun. There was this theme song that was so good. It's probably not great, but I'm 90% sure it was playing at that party. That same song.
The Chili Con Carnage. I thought it was like a sample. Really good song. Like, I remember thinking, I was like, that song's a bop. Whatever was playing in the back.
I think maybe it's also sampling the same thing.
Right.
Maybe. But it was great. Even though that scene was complete gibberish.
Oh, so yeah, like the rest of it. So that's like the, again, massive quotation marks framework. That's Vicious Cycles. But let's talk about...
Who directed and starred in Vicious Cycles?
I mean, I couldn't...
Tell me.
No one notable starred in it. Like, no one is interesting. Oh. So I didn't note down the cast, I'm afraid. So Vicious Cycles was directed by Marcel Sarmiento.
Okay.
Neat. And written by three people. TJ Simfell, David White, and Marcel Sarmiento.
Oh my God.
So
which ones are ands and which ones are ampersands, you know?
One and.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
I was going to be so disappointed if there were any. I'm like, surely it didn't take several rounds of different people writing this.
That's Vicious Cycles.
It had
cycles.
To be one team of people who are bad at writing, right?
But the first little segment that we have was Dante the Great, Michelle's favorite. Yes. It was directed and written by Greg Bishop.
Hey, Greg, excellent job. My hero.
It's loosely about this magician that uncovers his own like source of magic.
Yeah.
Like, he actually has a magical touch that comes out of a cape.
Yeah.
And so when he wears the cape, he's able to like put his hand through, like have like a portal and transport himself. And he meets a young magician's assistant and she wants to be a magician, and he teaches her his tricks, and she realizes that he's been killing people through his magic. And so in the end, she and him end up having this big magician fight where they're like summoning shit out of each other's hands. And she ends up getting him eaten by the cloak. It's such a fun, well, stupid segment. And it's so tacky.
It's so tacky. But you're misrepresenting, because you're implying that he kills them separate. What's happening is that the cloak... he puts the cloak over them, and then the cloak goes and eats them by just sort of generally fluffing about over it.
He snaps their neck.
Yeah, sometimes, but then he still feeds it to the cloak.
The magician's assistant. Her name's Scarlet.
Yeah,
her ex-boyfriend is killed by him because her ex-boyfriend like slaps her and is mean to her. So Dante summons him into his room. And then just he's like, sit, and he like makes him sit on the ground, and then he just snaps his neck immediately.
Well, but
then he puts his cloak on it and it eats him up.
One of his old assistants, he just like goes to her sleeping and puts it on, and then she goes, ah, and is like fighting with a definitely not animated cloak. It's also, I really want to emphasize to the audience, if you're imagining a cloak that's like a really nice cloak that's like felt or something, and it looks like spooky in it, it's like dollar store plastic material cloak.
It's like dollar store like satin, like black satin. it's cheap. You can see that they've hemmed it. Like, it's just terrible.
It's such an aggressively ugly and cheap looking cloak. And to see this like man in a goatee in his like white shirt tucked in with this awful cloak being like, I'm Dante the Great.
And it's like directed in this mockumentary style where they get like people to look like professors being like, Dante is not like a magician we've ever seen before. We don't know where he is today. Like,
I actually, for one thing, I appreciated that because it was interesting, there's no way for it to be spooky. But I appreciate it on a technical level because I actually feel like there was a lot of work put in of like, this is the lighting setup for this guy. And like the lighting setup on Dante is a lot more like glamour lighting. Yeah. Whereas on like the professors, it's like on location. And then for her, it's like a police interview. And I was like, that's actually attention to detail.
The only problem is that like the actors that they got in were so shockingly bad and so unconvincing, so cringy to watch. I was almost thinking like this whole segment, there's a bit where they're like, it's like shooting, it's like handheld footage of them on stage, and he's almost trying to seduce Scarlet and show him his tricks. And it's like this handhold stuff revolving around them. And I was thinking, this is like a low budget Prestige. Like, this feels like they're trying to get that style of the Prestige, like montage moments.
Well, at the end when she goes like, no, sorry, my dear, or whatever. Yeah. And it's revealed that she's gotten the cloak to eat him or something. That what she should have said was, aha, the Prestige, which is my favorite bit of the Prestige.
No, she goes, first step is the promise. Next is the pledge.
No. So you're remembering it all wrong, because at the end of the movie, when Michael Caine walks out of the darkness, he goes, aha, the Prestige. That's how I did it.
Bring it
was
back. Me.
I was magic. Just in case anyone hasn't seen it, that's not a spoiler. That doesn't happen. My favorite part of it was the magic fight where like the police come to try and get him, and the director is so concerned with having to like cut around all of the
magic,
kind of cool premise for magic, that it's like this like weird obfuscation to the 10th degree. So it means what you're watching is him going like, huh, and then like a clearly like mid cut to like someone landing on a pile of spikes or whatever, and like doing every single magic thing.
But the thing is, like, it was such a fun segment.
So fun.
I loved it. I enjoyed it so much. Couldn't take my eyes away.
I actually would fully, if the director said it was intended to be funny, I would go, then you did a good job.
Yeah.
All you would need to cut is the weird bit where you open a rabbit, because that was stupid.
Oh, that was dumb.
That was dumb.
But the rabbit looked really nonplussed. It was like,
It didn't care.
Yeah,
it was fine. If you took that out, it actually works as a really funny comedy. Oh, and then at the end where she's like, I'm putting the cloak away, she buries it, and then it's like behind her on a video, and she walks over to it, and then like what looks like the silhouette of the monsters from Scooby-Doo jumps out.
Because she burns it and it comes back for her. Do you remember that bit in Ghostbusters 2 where there's that I don't know who plays her. I actually haven't seen it since I was a kid. I've only seen it once and I remember it so good.
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver is on the couch and that hand plunges.
That's actually from Ghostbusters 1.
Where a hand plunges out from the bottom of the couch?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. All right.
It's genuinely scary.
Yeah, it scared me so much as a kid. It terrified me.
Because then it like comes all around and then like the door opens and it's one of the watchdogs.
Yeah.
And it's like yelling, ooh, and like it's going to possess her. That's scary. That's a scary bit of Ghostbusters.
Scary bit of Ghostbusters.
It's great. It's really great.
Next segment.
Okay.
Which I don't know how I feel about this one.
Yeah, fair.
It's just so bizarre, but it's the Spanish one.
Yeah.
A man is working in his garage and his wife is like sleepily like, come to bed. And he's like, soon. And he opens up a portal in his garage that he's been working on and a parallel him is staring back at him. They're filming each other and they agree to swap places in each other's lives just for like 15 minutes. I think that's what they agree on. That's what I heard them say 15 in Spanish. That's literally what it is.
Just to get the subtitles out of the way, by the way, quickly.
Yeah.
We kept trying to like try different other subtitles and none of them did this section. Notably, when he says like, shh, that's subtitled. When they say no, that's subtitled. And so I looked it up and I actually found a lot of other people complaining. On some platforms, like on some, I think Netflix in America has the subtitles for that section, but like the Blu-ray release and most streams of it, they just didn't subtitle it. There just isn't any subtitles.
That's so weird.
So that's why
you did your
it
best.
It wasn't a technical mistake.
You.
It just
I believe
there
you.
Just wasn't any.
That's so weird.
Because again, they subtitled the English in those sections.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Continue on.
So he swaps places and he goes into this other parallel. So there's a main guy and mm-hmm. then there's the parallel
guy. I think
guy.
His name's Alfonso.
Main Alfonso and parallel Alfonso.
Yeah.
Main Alfonso goes into parallel Alfonso's world and finds his wife awake having champagne with two strange men. And they're...
And we hear fucking.
We hear fucking because they're watching this weird film. Mm. And I think it's meant to be like... The moaning is coming from the film, but the film is just these weird photos of like crosses.
I thought it was like there's a sex party in the other room because that's why she has like a robe on.
I think it's the movie that they're watching.
Oh.
And then in the center of the floor is a sack just bleeding onto the floor.
Yeah.
And they're just looking at it.
They're just looking at it. They just sit there. There's like a full 5 minutes where we're just sitting with them looking at it.
He starts to feel a bit uncomfortable. So when he tries to leave... A bit uncomfortable. When he tries to leave, the two guys track him down. They pull down their trousers, and out of their trousers comes an alien-like penis that he stabs.
It's so clearly like a sock puppet.
Yeah,
like,
it's a hand. It's a hand. It's like being like,
it's a wrist. It's like turning. Gooey, and there's tufts of hair coming off of it. It's like, because it's like a forearm size. So it's also like huge, so it's not scary.
Yeah.
The perspective also, they should have used a different lens. Like, on a technical perspective, they should have used a different lens because the problem is that it definitely doesn't look like it's coming from the guy's torso.
It
looks like it's coming from well behind him.
And then he rushes back inside. He sees Marta, and she's trying to chat to him. And when she tries to stop him, he just punches her in the face.
What? Well, she also reveals her, like, crab vagina.
Yeah, sorry, she does. She reveals her also demonic genitals.
Yeah.
And then when he just punches her in the face, it's such a weird hit. And he runs back into his parallel world and he finds in the main world parallel Alfonso has found Marta asleep and he tries to like get his
sock puppet penis
and she just stabs the shit out of him. So when main Alfonso gets back to his main world, parallel Alfonso has been attacked by Marta.
Yeah,
parallel Alfonso goes to his demon Marta and puts his head on her demonic crotch, and main Alfonso cuts off the portal, so he's back in his own world. And he's being screwdrivered in the leg, he's bleeding, and he calls out for Marta, and she appears behind him covered in blood from fending off the evil Alfonso, and she stabs him.
Because
she thinks he's the evil Alfonso.
And also demon Marta thinks that it's normal Alfonso, you know? So, whoa.
It's crazy.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Really makes you think about sex and blood.
I don't know which bit I love more. The bit where he, as you said, feels uncomfortable with the meat sack. So he runs outside and looks into the sky and there's an Antichrist blimp. It's like, he just sees this guy, a blimp with an upside down cross on it.
So evil.
Oh, this is evil world. So it's not even just that they are fucked up. It's that this is a world of demons.
The sock puppet dick is probably my favorite thing I've ever seen in this whole podcast.
It's It's pretty funny and not scary.
Good. And not scary. But it's just so good.
When Marta comes to get normal Alfonso and she like opens in some kind of neat like creature work. I like it's like
creature work.
It's like the way that it as a puppet like opens is kind of cool. But then it opens and it makes me go like, whoever directed this, have they ever seen a vagina before? Because do they know that vaginas aren't on the front of the human?
They are, and they run all the way up your tummy.
Because this
one big long slit.
It feels a lot more like she has a belly button that's a demon. It's not vaginal at all.
Yeah, it's really on her like lower, like the navel. Like it's just it's
not even close.
It's like
to
her vagina runs from the normal place that a vagina is to her belly button. That's where the vagina is.
That's where this guy fucks his wife then goes, "Was that good?" And she goes, "Yeah."
Yeah. But that you saw how big those like sock puppet thingies are. So there's a lot of vagina it needs. Anyway, that was the second one.
Yeah.
Then we've got the third one. The third one plot wise is pretty shitty, but it's like it's a long fight sequence essentially.
Fully half of it is just hanging out with the most irritating skaters.
There's like these two guys. They have a videographer who's like following them around. They want to get some cool shots of them skating.
It's all like buddy. Well, I mean, the whole thing is all through like in-universe cameras. Yeah. I don't think we've even established that. But,
Yeah.
But this in particular is on like buddy cams and like helmet cameras.
Yeah, and they're like skating around. And then the videographer's like, hey, there's a place in Tijuana that's really cool to skate at. So they go to fucking Mexico and they bring like firecrackers and guns and joints because they're teenagers.
They're surely all like they must be already just on the other side of Tijuana.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and so they go to Tijuana to skate and this creepy woman stands in the center of the skate park.
They are so not fussed. They continue skating. They're like, whoa, who's this?
That's
woman?
Crazy.
Are you a ninja? I think they say at one point.
Yeah. And the videographer goes up to her and she rips his arm off and they all start freaking out.
I wrote this down because I thought it was so funny. If anyone has seen one of Casey Frey's videos, it has the same intonation as one of the characters in that, because the guy gets his arm fully ripped off and the rest of them go, oh, what the fuck, dude? And like that's the biggest reaction.
And then a bunch of different demonic characters surface.
Yeah.
And it's the longest fight sequence ever of them beating the shit out of these guys.
Because it's all helmet cam and body cam, it's also impossible to tell the physical nature of what's happening.
And like, it's not worth describing the fight sequence, just that the two guys seem to get out alive at the end of it.
Yeah,
but the videographer is dead and the other guy is dead.
The one guy gets his arm ripped off. And then I think because he's like in oil or their blood is oil, because then he gets set alight. Or is that the other guy?
Oh my God, the blood fire. And then the blood sets on fire. And we're like, what?
Fully alight.
Yeah.
And then the other guy gets stabbed by the sword. There's a sword.
There is a sword.
But then they all become skeletons.
Yeah.
That's where it got better for me, is when it stopped being like spooky dudes in makeup and started being like...
full on skeletons.
Well, because then it was fun and silly, because then it was them using a skateboard to beat skeletons that were like chattering at them. It was like Jason and the Art. There's even a point where a skeleton looks at them, which means it's also looking at the camera, and then it flips them off and then explodes.
That's what I mean. This film, I don't have any bad feelings towards it because it was so silly and fun. It made no sense, but I don't care. I had a good time. So that's everything that happens in this nonsensical
film. That's
the
overview. Now we can really start the podcast.
You know, let's do it all over again. Do you want to hear some trivia?
Sure, yeah. IMDb
trivia. I have one piece of trivia.
Just one?
Just one.
There was only one piece of interesting.
There were five pieces of trivia and four of them were utterly uninteresting.
Oh,
I mean, like just really boring shit about... this thing is a callback to VHS1. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
And look, I watched the quality of this movie. I doubt anyone wrote anything down for posterity because they certainly didn't write down the things they were supposed to for their job.
The trivia, which is fairly interesting, Rob Zombie was set to direct, but couldn't agree with the studio on how the story should proceed, so he stepped down.
Oh, yeah, because he wanted to make it worse. Fuck Rob Zombie.
That's all I got. You want to hear some reviews?
Yeah, why not?
The shortest trivia section ever. Reviews! So, on Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds a score of 34%. The site's consensus reads, VHS Viral is hardly a sensation as it cycles through the franchise's least frightening vignettes yet.
Mm.
P. Peter De Bruges of Variety described the film as three playful yet thoroughly disposable experiments in short film POV cinema.
These reviews are far better than I thought. Like, I know. 34% is high for this list.
Frank Sheck of The Hollywood Reporter wrote, "Lacking the originality of the first film and the superior entries of the second, VHS Viral spirals downwards towards the same sort of obsolescence as the home video format that provides its title."
It is so funny that they made an anthology series that is like so intertwined with digital recording and digital like online
and
platforms.
They called it VHS. Yeah. They had like a fucking GoPro on their helmet. And it's like VHS.
And they're like, let's live stream it. It's like there's no VHS around.
A.A. Dowd of the AV Club rated it D+ and called it slapdash and ineffectual.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Jordan Hoffman of The Guardian rated it 1 out of 5 stars and wrote, "Besides one bright spot involving razor-sharp genitals, the horror compilation is bereft of thrills, scares, or creativity." And the reason that I bombarded you with a lot of critic reviews is that so many IMDb reviews were not interesting. So I've only got one.
Oh my God.
I really combed through 10, 9, and 8, and I found one.
Yeah.
This is a 10 out of 10 review. It was left in 2021. "If you do not find this movie interesting at all, you have no taste in anything, really." That being said, the bad reviews on this title are from kids who prefer to watch prank videos on YouTube and classic remakes which feature horrible actors that are rated 9+. VHS series is number one. Not debatable. A 10 out of 10 series. 10 out of 10.
Hey, can't argue. It's not debatable.
It's not debatable.
No, can't argue with the man.
Well, that was this psychopath's review. What was your review, Michelle?
Look, it's a hard line on this podcast that we walk of, gosh, I got so much joy out of Dante the Great.
Yeah, the spooky cape.
And his spooky cape and about, like, skaters fighting skeletons. That's fun. It's also truly atrocious. Every line is delivered like it was written and delivered by an algorithm and then digitally added in post. You know, it's like all ADR, but you got like Siri or the TikTok lady to just read it out. That's how every piece of dialogue, every like camera movement looks like it's a digital one to try and hide a piece of visual effects that is also the most obvious thing. It's really, really horrendous filmmaking. It is worse than some of the student films that I've seen. And this was like theatrically released, I think. Boy, this is rough. I'm going to give it like 1.7.
Fuck,
maybe.
That's lower than I thought.
Well, because if 2 is it's like a movie, this is nothing like a movie.
That's true.
With the caveat that I would also heartily recommend it any day.
Yeah.
Except there was one interlude in the middle where the guy got stuck on the back. That was like gnarly in a way that was upsetting. I didn't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, that
was gross. I didn't like that.
Yeah, that was awful.
If you could skip that, skip the middle interlude where the biker gets stuck on it and then just watch the rest of it, hearty recommend. 1.7.
1.7 hearty recommend. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this film. I'm going on record. It cured my depression. I'm a happy woman now. But it genuinely, just from the insanely low quality of this film, brought me so much joy.
Yeah.
And I just loved how insane every premise was and how little it took itself seriously.
Yeah. But even I just don't know how much that's intentional.
Yeah, I know. The tone is confused in that. I think the vicious cycles bit took itself more seriously than every other bit.
Seriously.
But I thought the other bits were like, I thought like that last segment was really tongue-in-cheek about like the skaters.
Surely.
Because they were just joking all the time, you know? And like they were so unfazed by all the destruction around them. But like the middle segment as well with like just the creepy genitalia, it was silly and hammy. And then that the Dante's cape bit was so silly.
So funny.
Apart from the framework, I thought every fucking little vignette was so funny and silly in its own way. Somehow this brought me joy. So I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 10, which is so much higher than it deserves.
That is so high.
It's actually wrong.
It is like objectively incorrect.
My brain is melting. He's like, you do this for 2 years and this is what happens.
minutes.
The scale doesn't exist anymore.
We're going to be gibbering idiots by the end of this.
We're going to be not going to even, I don't know if we'll be alive by the end of this, man. I just don't know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, we'll be broadcasting from the fire wastes.
Well, Michelle, that was VHS Viral. Guys, listeners, friends, foes.
Foes?
Yeah, enemies of the podcast.
Who love to listen.
Who love to listen. Don't forget to follow us on social media and say hi. We are on Twitter under Rate Descend Pod. We are on TikTok under Rating Descending. And you can email us at ratingdescending@gmail.com. We obviously love your emails. Luke, thank you so much for seeing my perspective. You hear me. We are kin. We are kindred spirits. Email us because we'll read them with our own eyeballs.
Yeah. I mean, you can DM us, but emails are more likely. I can like pin it and then I can remember it exists.
You can't DM me. I'm engaged. Okay?
No.
Don't be sliding into my DMs.
But you could also, if you would like, you can join us or follow us on our own social media. You can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at michelle.stclair.
Or you can find me on Instagram under Abigail J. Ward.
Nice. And also, pretty please, leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It not only really helps, it also makes me feel great.
Yeah, I read some of the reviews today and they were so sweet and charming. And thank you so much for the people that have dropped us a review. We appreciate it.
I genuinely really appreciate it, and because it is really genuinely helpful.
Yeah, it's sweet. And I'm glad that you all love my burps so much. Michelle, what are we watching next week?
Next week, we are watching the 2020 remake of The Grudge.
I'm glad it's Spookums in April!
Abby, we're trying to get them excited. You don't sound that deflated.
Spookums in April!
There's music under it, so this is going to sound so awful. Hell yeah, audio medium, yeah. Baby!
Catch you there.
Or otherwise, I'll have a grudge.